Welcome to Steppin' Out, the 12-step meeting on the air. You'll meet real people with true stories of addiction and recovery. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hello and welcome to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew and this is Steppin' Out. We have our guests from Al-Anon here to share their experience, strength, and hope. And first up, we have Dylan. Dylan, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good, Dylan. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I grew up in Westchester.
Okay. And
I don't typically come from, I don't come from a typical Al-Anon sort of family. In the sense that, I don't know if there is such a thing, but in the sense that my parents were not drinkers. The alcoholism in my family goes back to their parents' parents.
So two generations.
Two generations, although my father's father did drink every day, and however, that's, you know.
So it's interesting that you say that. So it doesn't have to be someone immediately in their family that's the active alcoholic in order to qualify for the Fellowship of Al-Anon.
Yeah. However, the other side of that is my mother was in recovery, and when I was younger, had suggested that I go to Al-Anon.
What type of recovery was she in?
She was in a substance program, although, you know, she found it to be the one for her, I don't know if, you know, I didn't associate the substance with her behavior. However, the behavior of alcoholism is in her family.
Okay.
The primary person in my life that had affected me the most would be my mother. From very young, I had kind of been very enmeshed with her, and I had a lot of, as the topic we heard from the previous speakers tonight, I've had a lot of fear. Towards my father and my sister. My sister's a year and a half older than me. My father is not he's not an expressive person in general. He's actually quite a gentle person, but he does have a lot of anger in him. And it was sort of growing up and living around a, you knew something was going on in there, but it never would, it would rarely come out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a difficult upbringing. I would go to my mother for support, and my mother was not always she was somebody who herself had been raised by people who, exhibit behavior of.
So your mom was a wounded spirit as well.
Yeah, she's okay. A wounded spirit. It's just the normal, the perfectly normal dysfunctional behavior. There, very present and warm at one moment, and then gone and telling you to, figure it out on your own.
So they're either running at you or running from you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was just sort of most of my growing up. There was some physical, it's strange to call it abuse. There was a physical element, I guess.
Do you mean? What kind of physical
she
element?
She was, oh, well, yeah. I mean, not like, she would take her aggression out on me often growing up. And however, I also was, I did have a part in it. Even, I can even remember, like, you know, as a kid, I knew if I could, you push that button, I get my sister to beat on me, I would get attention, then people would come and come to
sure.
Help. Well, that was the idea. So really, like, the worst thing my parents sort of, I do think they did their best. The worst that they did towards me was neglect. And
did they withhold love? When you say neglect, how so?
Well, I wouldn't say it's I wouldn't specifically say it's withholding love.
Well, can you be more specific about the neglect?
But I can say that they were fearful of doing, they were like, my mom was often fearful of, she wanted to give me love and she did want to support me, but she was scared of anything else of spoiling me. So it was a constant like, okay, you know, like I've given you the caring and the love. Now get the hell out of here because you got to figure it out.
Okay. Was it like, well, I mean, what was that all about? Was it like control for her? Like, I'm trying to understand.
Well, in a sense, you'd have to ask her.
No, as you see it.
As I see it, I see it as, you know, I see it as fear. And I mean, she grew up, her mother was like this. She had an abusive sister.
So she's just sharing the joy then.
Yeah, it's as they say, it is a family disease.
Okay.
And it's all over the place. And that's my mother's side of the family. It's, you know, it's a family that is, you know, it has, it's very, you know, it's a large family and it's definitely, it's very fully dysfunctional to the day.
Specifically speaking, what was the neglect that you felt as you saw it as a child? That you could.
Well, I guess, I mean, there's some things I could say, which, you know, often my family, my sister was somebody that they needed to concentrate and spend time on. They saw me very early as someone who could take care of himself.
Okay.
And so often I would be left to my own devices. I could entertain myself. I would draw and, you know, kind of be very peaceful and not make any noise.
Okay, I got you.
And so I don't think that stopped to this day.
No, I got you. So it was kind of like sins of omission. Like they just left you, you know, they just kind of let you be, you know.
Yeah. Right. Which has, you know, has its positive sides and
it has its negative sides. No, sure. I mean, as a child, I'd imagine that you want your parents' love and attention. And if it's not there, it's going to do a number on you, you know.
Yeah. And then, you know, and I seeked it out in different ways. And I realized that, you know, with the drawing, you know, I often, the places I'd go would be fantasy. And I was a creative kid.
Well, tell us about your creative outlets.
Drawing, painting, you know, and I went to an art school and then, you know, went on to further, you know, other, you know, film and video.
Cool.
But often every one of those creative projects was just, it was my only way of expressing things. And two, it was trying to reach out and connect to people.
Mm.
And often there were, you know, there were, it didn't, the, you know, the equation didn't work out so well.
Sure.
Often. And so that became, in a sense, I've kind of, I don't want to say that was an outlet, and I've kind of put that down actually as, you know, today. And I want to encourage myself and to practice more, you know, communicating to people, expressing my feelings to people, and to my family and others.
Yeah. So give us a little bit more. What were the teenage years like? I mean, was it,
I had a very, very rushed time in, middle school and high school. I was, very, withdrawn.
Okay.
I was very fearful. I was very, you know, felt very awkward, felt I looked awkward. And, you know, I was, you know, one, I had run away one day in middle school and I got put into an alternative program.
And what was that? What back up there? What was this alternative program? What happened?
It's just something that was going on in the public schools. My sister actually happened to go to that program as well.
Oh, okay. It wasn't like juvenile hall or something.
No.
Oh,
it was like, these, you know, there's some sort of troubled kids who, you know, and let's try this different method of educating them.
I gotcha.
It was particularly strange. And anyway, that's a whole other issue.
They had a hard time connecting with you a little bit? Yeah. Hmm? I said they had a hard time connecting with you?
Oh no! It wasn't well organized.
Right.
I wasn't well prepared for high school. And
you want to continue from that point?
Sure. Well, I could just say that I didn't mean to emphasize that, but
no, we were there, so why not? Let's tell us about it.
It was just a different way of educating kids, there were a couple subjects that I missed out, which just made me a little ill prepared for high school.
Okay,
and so it kind of, you know. Although I, you know, by the end of high school, I was a person who got, you know, whatever, you know, A's and was working hard and kind of in a sense overachieving. There was a period there where there was a total I could care less because there was like, no matter how hard I tried, I still was butting up against, like, I just didn't know this stuff and I wasn't getting any necessarily help with it. And, you know, through the time, you know, my parents had, there were, I had gone to, you know, professionals and try different things. And, you know, I, you know, after I guess the one thing that I did have trouble with, although I was able to make very, you know, close friendships, mm-hmm. Actually probably too close friendships that were not like too close, but that I, you know, I sort of had all my eggs in one basket. I had very few friends, but I had very deep friendships with these people.
Okay.
So when things like, you know, going to college or, you know, kind of growing up and growing apart became very difficult for me because, you know, I didn't, it felt like there was, you know, there's so much work and time invested and all, you know, in deep friendships and, for them to grow apart, it was very difficult for me thinking about, you know, intimate relationships in general. I wasn't, you know, the best with romantic stuff.
Well, what was it? Trust? Was that where your issue
Yeah,
well,
trust is yeah huge. Trust and fear and trust and shame.
And that goes back to you with stuff with your mom.
Yeah, and my sister.
And sister, and, yeah.
I mean, that's just coarse stuff, and it's still with me today. But you know, it's a It's a question of feeling that and then doing the next thing, you know, after. And it's like, what do you do after that, having those feelings?
And that's a good question. And I was actually going to ask you that. I mean, what was it? Why don't you give us a little bit about the precursor to your taking action in Al-Anon? I mean, what was the last 90 days like, you know, before you actually came into recovery? And where were you? What was going on in your life at the time? What were you feeling? You know?
There was a there's a series of things. I was working three jobs and I was taking a couple classes for school.
What do they call that? Hypervigilant? Three jobs at
school?
Yeah,
there were part-time jobs, but they were pretty. It was pretty intense. And,
okay.
And then I also, in the midst of this, had a very trying relationship with somebody. It wasn't like an official romantic relationship. It was more of a situation that. Kept reoccurring, and it was I kind of reached like a total overload, and I wouldn't say it was my bottom per se, but it was just like a concept, just an understanding that I was totally, like something was totally out of whack here. And
what was out of whack? Just, I mean, were you just having a hard time on?
Well, I mean, with her, there was you know, the situations with it was this constant push and pull where I didn't even necessarily, you know, didn't like have a deep reason to be with her or like a desire or whatever, but I kept going there and kept trying to resolve what I thought her problems were because she kept coming to me and, you know, I thought she had some sort of, you know, medical disorder or something, and I often told, you know, gave her my opinions about that, and I really like kept digging in and digging in and digging in, and I had this. I even remember telling her that I used to like think that I could go. I liked going like 12 rounds with, like psychologically 12 rounds with people, and well, she, you know, she knocked me out basically. And what I had taken time off from her. This was, you know, through. Some help from other places, and I subsequently there was a series of other things, and I had gotten to this place where I was having these panic attacks. I actually had to. I was living at home for a little bit at this time, and it was an awkward thing because it didn't feel. I mean, it felt worse. It's actually I reached my bottom of my own. Of like a spiritual bottom.
Well, you know what? While we're here, describe to our audience what these panic attacks felt like. I mean, you know, I take it it's more than psychological. This is something that you felt physically.
Yeah, oh yeah. It was just like an overwhelming. It's just like having like some sort of thought like, oh, I forgot this thing. You know, like I forgot my keys.
Describe it physically. What does it feel like physically?
Well, it's just like it just comes up from your gut and goes all the way up to your head, and you just can't do anything but just kind of wait for it to be over with. And the more you think about it, the worse it gets.
Yeah, okay.
So it was that kind of a scenario. And I was living with my mother, you know, at this time, and she, having been in the rooms, and she had offered what she knew and had offered some things about, you know, some slogans and some mm-hmm. notions of praying and stuff like that. And I tried it, and I actually didn't mind it. And I said to myself, well, if this was the barrier for me from, you know, this all the stuff when I was growing up with my mom,
mm-hmm.
that why don't I try one of these programs? And so gradually what occurred was I came in specifically knowing I would like a sponsor, and I kind of pulled myself. I kind of was able to remove myself from my, you know, not physically or even emotionally or all this stuff. It's just sort of like understanding where my mom had her stuff and I had my stuff.
Okay, so you were able to differentiate that?
Yeah, and okay. It's been a lot more of an understanding of just being. You know, being able to take things one day at a time, being able to let things in, being able to be present, being able to express things, being able to know what I feel, mm-hmm. want, and would like to do, rather than like having other influences, such as my mom was a big influence.
Sure, sure. What do you want to say to someone who's still struggling with this sort of thing? Your message is clearly hope, but other than that, do you have anything that you'd want to share with the audience while you have the opportunity?
That's interesting. Well, I guess just that it's
okay, man. I mean, you know, I don't mean to put the pressure on you, but, you know, there could be somebody driving around listening to the show tonight that's a little bit curious about the Fellowship of Al-Anon and wondering if it's right for them. You know, what would you say to that person?
Well, I would say that it's definitely the program works and the 12 steps work. The whole fellowship of the program offers, it's a safe place in the sense that it's a gentle program. There isn't a right way to do this. It being kind of this place where you're not necessarily putting down a substance, you're not doing an action,
mm-hmm.
That you're, trying to change your behavior, your thinking, rather than and then taking action after that.
Now, once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out.